This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Welcome to the Modern Homesteading Podcast.
We have allowed ourselves to become so disconnected and ignorant about something that is as intimate as the food that we eat.
Be prepared to grow your own for victory.
God said, I need somebody strong enough to clear trees and heave bales, yet gentle enough to yean lambs and wean pigs and tend the pink foamed pullets who will stop his mower for an hour to splint the broken leg of a meadowlark. So God made a farmer.
Hello and welcome to the Modern Homesteading Podcast. I'm your host, Harold Thornbrough, and glad you're joining me again this week. And we have another great one for you today. I'm going to be joined by Nicole Sauce. She is the host of the Living Free in Tennessee podcast, and she's just going to talk to us today about, well, we're going to talk about all kinds of things as we usually do on this show, but we're going to talk about her journey into homesteading and how she kind of ended up where she's at and what she's doing, but we're really going to focus on building self-reliance and freedom into your life, and I think she has a lot to offer on that topic. And she's doing a lot of really cool things where she's at. So I think you're really, really going to enjoy that interview. But before we jump into that, I thought I'd just share a few things, what's going on around here on my homestead. And, we had our, big freeze a couple days ago. We had our, woke up to a 20, I think it was 27 degree temperatures here at the homestead. And I planned it about everything already. So, I had tomatoes in the ground. So the night before I was scrambling, me and my wife got out there and we did all the covering, and I kind of triple covered the tomatoes. I went way overboard on the tomatoes and the peppers, but it all worked out. I mean, I had milk jugs cut with the bottoms cut out of them. I put over them. Then I laid sheets over that. Then I had the row cover over the top of that. So I had like a triple protection. And if that wasn't enough, I took my seed mats that I have in my greenhouse, my electric seed mats for propagating seeds, and I laid them on the ground next to the tomatoes, a couple per bed, and plugged those in underneath all that row cover, and trying to generate a little bit of heat under there. Well, it all paid off. Everything survived. I had row cover over everything, even cool cold weather plants. It was easier just to roll it out over the entire beds all over the whole property. So, yeah, it worked out pretty well, and everything survived, so I'm glad about that, because it was, I knew I was taking a big risk by planting everything early like I did, so I'm just fortunate we got through that without losing anything, and it looked like everything fared really well. So I did lose a couple cucumber plants. I had them covered, but they weren't covered very well, but fortunately I had some more of those in the greenhouse, so I was able to just replace those, so no big deal. It all worked out pretty good. We're about four days away from hatching on the quail now, on the quail eggs I got here in the studio, and they'll hatch, and we'll get those in the brooder and get them in the cages, and you know, constant expansion of livestock. I have a rabbit that's due with some kits here in a few days. So just, it's that time of the year, you know, a lot of things are going on in the homestead, and good things are happening. So ever growing. But yeah, hopefully you fared that weather well. I know a lot of the United States was suffering with that cold blast. So hopefully your gardens did well and you got everything covered up and got through it. So enough of that. Let's just jump right into our interview with Nicole Sauce. I know you're going to enjoy this one. Well, I'm joined today by Nicole Sauce. She is the host of the Living Free in Tennessee podcast. Nicole, welcome to the Modern Homesteading Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, like I said earlier, we should have made this happen a long time ago, because you have a lot to
no
offer.
No kidding.
Yeah. And,
well, so do you. I listen to some of your stuff.
Yeah. Well, you know, I make myself sound good by inviting on, you know, knowledgeable guests, and that helps me a lot. That makes me look good. But now you, you're down in Tennessee, obviously, from the name of your podcast. And well, I think what first pointed me to you is I think I found you right when you first started. You was just a few episodes in. And this, mm-hmm. how long ago was that? Like 3 years ago, probably?
2016.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's been a little while. You were just a few episodes in, and I'm all the time searching for good homesteading podcasts, and I came across yours, and I actually went to high school down in the area where you live, so it made me kind of think, oh wow, I'll listen to this because you know I identify with a lot of what you're talking about. Yeah, I grew up in Cookeville. Well, I was there through my high school years in Cookeville, so yeah.
That's funny. Well, Cookeville just my gym closed yesterday, so now my choir doesn't happen and my gym closed. Cookeville has nothing left for me. I'm mad about it.
Yeah, well, you know, I tell you what, I've been just so aggravated with this everything shut down. I mean, you know, I understand, and there's people on both sides of the fence, but it seems like there's the things that are open, I don't care that they're open, and the things that are closed are the things I wish were open. So it's like, I don't know, everybody's idea of what's essential is, you know, different.
I get it on the choir. You know, we have 75 people in the room. Most of them are over 60. So, I get it. High-risk group. The gym, though, a bunch of young people with doors open to the outside, very easy to be separate from each other because it's not one of those – it's a CrossFit gym, so it's not one where you're, like, right on each other.
Yeah.
And they actually voluntarily closed, and then the shutdown happened, so they couldn't do any kind of reopening, even just for outdoor classes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, four people who started a business 8 years ago just lost their entire dream. It's really sad.
Yeah, I'd have a feeling we ain't seen the end of that. There's going to be a lot of places that just aren't going to be able to weather the storm, I'm sure. And it's sad. Yeah, it's very sad. But it kind of brings me around to what I want to talk about with you today, you know, which is, you know, some of the topics. Before we get into that, though, we'll come to that in a minute. I think a lot of our audience is, you know, we have a lot of the same audience, but there's a lot that aren't.
Mm-hmm.
So could you take a minute and just tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of how you ended up where you are?
Sure. I came out of college with a teaching degree in German and music and discovered really quickly that a high school teacher was not a good fit for me. And it was mainly because of the regulatory environment inhibiting my ability to assess a class, set the curriculum based on their skill level to move them forward, because it was right around the time that they were starting to really prescriptively say what had to be done in each class in the areas where I was. So I went into executive training and worked a lot with English as second language training and support and cultural training for families moving from one country to another. And then from there, transitioned into software. At some point, realized the job was not my passion. And at the same time, discovered that some of my political ideas might not work. And I remember sitting there, and it was about mass transit in Portland, Oregon. And I was looking at the light rail system, and I said, well, if I was in charge, it would be done this way, and that's how it would work, and it wouldn't have made it so people commute double when you put a train in time. Mm-hmm. And then I thought about that some more, and I thought, you know, having to have me in charge is not fair. The whole idea of central planning is not fair because there's no way you can really properly assess what needs to happen to help people because different people have different needs. And there's no way to assess that. And so I happened to be working on the same floor as a liberty-oriented think tank, ended up working for them and working in the liberty movement for 14 years trying to change how central planners work. And I got so frustrated with that I just about exploded because, as you may know, changing things from the political side, it also doesn't work. Like, you have to – it's a game that's rigged. And – I'm not the person who benefits from that rigging. And I exploded and started a podcast called Living Free in Tennessee, talking about the things I can control, which is growing my own food, teaching people how to be better planners with their pantries, so that when a situation comes up where maybe you're out of a job or something, you have enough food for your family, and how to get value from your land and start taking the first steps towards being self-reliant and more independent, so that JOB that you think is loyal to you, when you discover they're not loyal, you're in a position to not drown.
Right. So
that's where I am today.
Yeah, that's what led you there. So your solution to the problem was move to Tennessee and start a podcast and start homesteading, right?
Yeah, grow coffee and yeah.
Yeah, you got a lot of little side gigs. We'll talk a little bit about that in a few minutes too, because I find that really fascinating. You're doing you got a few things going on the side hustles.
Yep.
And I think that's I think that's really good. I think it's a good path for a lot of people to go down, you know, to have some variety in your life, some money coming in, some diversity, you know, things coming in from mm-hmm. different places. And as most of us know, if you put all your eggs in one basket, you drop the basket, or the basket gets bumped and breaks, you know, you got problems. But, you know, if you got a bunch of different baskets, it's a little safer.
A little.
Yeah,
or it's a little less safe because you don't do any of them well. You have to watch out for that.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you can spend. That's what, you know. Let's go ahead and go down that path for a minute, because yeah, you know what, mm-hmm. what I think with the side hustles. I mean, there is a danger of that. Like, you find you don't do as many things well. Do you have to try to find side hustles that are easy and aren't, if you're going to have multiple side hustles, do you try to find ones that, you know, aren't super time consuming, ones that drain you mentally? I mean, is there a plan with that makes it so you can do more better?
There are plans for everybody. So everybody's going to be different. And when you walk down the side hustle path, you want to do it with some forethought of why you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And if the reason is I have a full-time job and I want to get a little bit more income and hopefully build a nest egg, for example, or turn it into my full-time job someday, that's when you would think about, okay, I'm going to try this side hustle. Does that work? I'm going to try that side hustle. What you don't want to do in that situation is 7 side hustles while working a full-time job,
because
you'll work yourself to death.
Yeah.
And nobody, I mean, that's not why we live, right? It's not to work ourselves to death. So I think that's one approach. If you're trying to do it to put together a full-time income, I think you need to think about side hustles that feed each other. For example, in the homesteading world, if you raise meat birds, you can raise egg layers and have meat and eggs. Mm-hmm. If you then partner with a CSA, you can add delivery of baskets of vegetables with your eggs. So you can start stacking things so that you're putting the same effort into multiple side hustles. I've got a friend who roasts coffee in Seattle, and he lives in the city, and he runs, you know, Grubhub and Uber Eats and stuff like that all day long while he is working on his roastery, because he doesn't have to get things out on a schedule to ship them.
Mm-hmm.
And if a really well-paying Grubhub job comes up, he does it. And if a crappy-paying one comes up, he doesn't. And he's able to be choosy because he doesn't have to have that income, but it's just, 20-minute trip and $50, I'll do that one.
Yeah. Yeah, I find I have a few, you know, little side hustles here and there that are temporary a lot of times, you know, like for a while I might be selling some comfrey cuttings and, you know, and then it might mm-hmm. be just doing different things. I might work on some cars for people, you know, and just do different things to bring in a few bucks here or there, do something like that. And what I find is that, I work best when I can pour myself into something
mm-hmm.
really heavy for many, many hours. And when I'm doing things for like 2 hours here and 2 hours there and an hour here and an hour there, that's hard for me. Yeah.
Well, so then if you're doing side hustles, you don't design it that way. You do more the thing like, I'm going to do one this summer where we're raising meat birds.
Yeah.
I'm going to raise 10 extra meat birds. I'm going to do a poultry processing workshop, and everybody gets a bird on the way out, and I'm going to sell tickets to that training, right? So A, they get some meat, and mm-hmm. B, they get training, and then my goal is to make enough money to offset the cost of raising all the birds.
Yeah. So you just kind of...
And that's just because you have this, I mean, I have the skill of processing and teaching, so I can do that, but that's an example of, I was going to do the meat birds anyway, and all I had to do was add one day where I feed people and teach them, and it pays for the whole thing, and then my food is free.
So in a way, you take one side hustle and mm-hmm. try to make multiple incomes from that side hustle.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot more sense, because then you know, of course, we only have so much time and so much mm-hmm. energy to pour into something. So, yeah, that just seems like a better way to do it. And I think about that with, like, podcasting, and you do, too. You can use mm-hmm. that podcast to make, you know, a couple different incomes and do things like that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it makes sense. So would you say that, you know, side hustles are part of living free for you? I mean, that, you know, because you don't have to work, you can work a full-time job and just have one job. Would you say that's part of what you believe is really good about living free? I mean, it helps to live free.
So I think it is important if you want to increase your independence to redefine your relationship with the tax collector. And when you own your own business, you make money. Like, you sell something, you make money. You subtract your expenses for whatever you had to do. Mm-hmm. And then you pay taxes on what's left. When you work a job, you make money, you pay taxes, and then you use the rest to pay your expenses.
Yeah.
And so by doing that, I don't have to earn as much money to live the lifestyle I want to live, which then means I have more freedom to focus on what's important to me. So I do think, you know, side hustle, not specifically, but I think learning how to take control of that financial relationship with the government is really important.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a conversation with a friend at work one day, and I'm, you know, of course, everybody knows me. I always have a few things going on, trying to, you know, little side hustles here and there. And he just called me out on it one day. He said, why? He said, why? You make pretty good money at your job. Why are you doing all that? Can't you just work one job, work hard, go home and relax, man? Do you have to just, you know, bust it all the way around the clock like that? And it did make me think. It's like, you know, your life does look a little easier than mine at times. So do I need to do that?
Yeah.
And it did make me think about
it. At the same time, though, if you lose your job and you have this other ecosystem that you've built around mm-hmm. yourself, it's going to be hard because you lose income, but you still have some income.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And then imagine what it was like to live in the to work in the dot-com sector, which I did when it crashed around, I think it was 2000 that took the big, like, nosedive. Maybe it was 2004. I don't remember. It was in that time where all of the rug just got ripped out from under everybody, and you lost your job, which was paying, you know, maybe $80,000, maybe $100,000 a year. Some people made more. And what you could get was entry level server at Starbucks
mm-hmm. yeah.
for a little bit above minimum wage. And you know, like, that was the option, or be unemployed.
Yeah.
If you have an ecosystem built around whatever it is that your passion is, you have income coming from that eco. That's actually what happened to me here. Is I was working a really well-paying job and had to leave for health reasons. And it was a nonprofit I had started, and I shut it down and went from having a pretty predictable salary to, I guess I'm going to start selling some duck eggs and some coffee because I need income. I had already started the podcast at that point, but
yeah.
I had no idea how I was making money that first year.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. I think that, I mean, when I look at like having a little side jobs to me, it is a security blanket, you know, because if something does happen, you've got something mm-hmm. to fall back on. I mean, and also it, you know, it's, even if you don't need that money, you can just put it back and save it for, you know, events yeah. like what are happening now. You know, you can just put it back.
Yeah.
And even if you weren't working when everything goes down, you don't have the side hustle going on during that time. Cause in my, you know, as a, I know a guy who he has some side hustles, but he can't even do anything with his side hustles right now because, you know, the quarantines and things, he can't even mm-hmm. do it, his side hustle. But over the last, you know, few years, he's been able to build up a pretty good nest egg. So he hasn't really had to stress through this, you know, this what's going on in the world right now with everything shut down and him not working because he did lose his job. I mean, I've actually been off for, 6 weeks now with my job.
Yeah.
And you know, it's just,
Scary. And
I should be going back, I think, next week or maybe the week after, but it's, mm-hmm. it's been a while, you know, and it's like, you know, if you weren't a little bit prepared for that, that could be bad. You know, I did get unemployment, but it took a month before I got my first check on unemployment.
Oh, well, I have a friend who worked like in a restaurant bar thing.
Mm-hmm.
He just got his first unemployment check 2 days ago.
Yeah. It takes a while.
And his stimulus check has still not come.
Mm-hmm.
So and, it was, you know, and that whole time rent is due because he was, you know, he's renting, not owning, like that, everything. He was trying to keep a positive attitude. Like, I'm watching him on Facebook try to post positive things every so often. He would just say, like, how do they expect us to live with no money? This is not working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, when the average American just doesn't have, you know, more than maybe a week or two put in the bank, you know, for to pay their bills with, that could be pretty stressful. So, yeah, I think living in a way that, you don't spend a lot of money. Number one, like you mentioned earlier, you know, you kind of live within your means, you know, put back some money, do some side hustles if you can. And, you know, and try to, I think it does build freedom in your life. It not only builds freedom for living, but it's just freedom from fear too. You know, you don't have to be afraid of what's going to happen tomorrow as bad as the person who doesn't have that, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think having a support network is also part of that. Like having your finances in order is super helpful. But if you have a strong family or a strong network, that also can help you through really hard times. And I think having varied interests just puts you in contact with many other people.
Yeah. I agree. I think that's I had cancer back in 2012, and I was off work for several weeks during that too. And and I remember that the network that we had around us was part of how we got through that. I mean, we had some money saved up. We was able to pay bills, but there were still people reaching out and just helping us right and left. I mean, we weren't even asking, which was what the amazing thing was. People just were doing it, you know, and, you know, it's amazing to have people like that in your life and around you. It can be part of that network. And it's not just family, it's friends. And I've experienced it in the online space and, you know, like our Facebook groups and things like that as well. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's just amazing, what you can build around you, and when you're just part of something bigger than yourself like that.
Yeah, I think, and it takes the perspective of how can I serve the group, right? So every time I've seen somebody say they can't find toilet paper, I text them and I say, do you need toilet paper? I don't have tons of toilet paper, but I had stocked up for my spring workshop, which has been delayed. So I have extra toilet paper right now. And I will commit 9 rolls of toilet paper to somebody if they really need it, right? And I think if you give to your network that way, it's really helpful. I've been really lucky because I'm alone here, that my 2 next door neighbors are really good friends. And when this started, we sat down and said, okay, we're going to operate like a family here. How do we get through this, all 3 of us, without, you know, losing our shirts or getting super sick and dying or any of these other, how can we work together on that? And that's what we've been doing. We've been working on each other's properties. With making sure that food supplies are in order, everything. And it's worked really, really well.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's really important. And that's good to have that around too. I mean, I think a lot of people hear you talk about that and they're probably a little bit envious of that because they wish they had some of that around them, you know, and they can. I mean, it takes some work and it takes effort, you know, and friendships don't come easy, really. I mean, people think they do, but I mean, real true friendships don't. You have to work at them and to build that into your life, but it's worth it. It's so worth it for sure.
Yeah, and, you know, you can get that if you're a church goer, you can get that through your church. You can get it from your gym. I was telling you, my gym just went out of business there. A lot of those people are like family to me in a lot of ways. That's why I'm so sad about it, because I know the 4 owners are devastated. And I know everybody who was, you know, like, place you'd go if you had a bad day and you go work out and talk to people to cheer you up. And you go, well, now that's gone, right? And it wasn't necessarily the owners that did it. It was just that was that central hub. And I think there are so many of those in our lives that when you start finding those communities and learn how to nurture it, it doesn't have to be your next door neighbors, I guess is my point.
Yeah.
It can be that person who's in your Facebook group that you've been discussing, you know, how to separate or plant comfrey properly for a long time. And you see they need something and you say, I've got that. Or they see you need something. If you foster, I think, that culture in the communities, and I think the homesteading community already is this way kind of naturally, you end up all being more stable and secure and powerful because you're willing to help each other. And that's one of the reasons I love homesteaders, because they want to help themselves and they want to live off the land and they want to learn and have this lifestyle. But when they see a homesteader with a goat with a health problem, they're the first ones to say, like, do you need me to come out there? Can you send me pictures and I'll talk you through it? And that's always been something I love about homesteading.
Yeah. And I'll tell you that, what I'm seeing now more than probably ever is I've seen so many people talk about wanting to be part of communities like that and want to do things on their property, want to start living a homesteading lifestyle, want to start living more free. And it's just this mind, you know, they just talk, 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 and be, and, you know, and I understand, you know, it's I do. I mean, it's the world we live in. It's just easier to go on about normal life, you know, sometimes than it is to take those steps, even no matter how bad you want it, really. But what I'm seeing is, though, is a lot of people are taking some action because things like this are a wake up call. You know, for me, I mean, crisis in general is a wake up call. I mean, for me, it was cancer, you know, a few years ago that said, get off your butt and get to work. I think a lot of people are getting that kick in the tail now with this. And I think that may be the only good thing that really comes out of this, you know, is that a lot of people will think differently. They'll change their mindset, and it'll cause some people to take action that might not have took action before, you know, all this happened.
Yeah, and so then we, as established homesteaders, need to say, okay, how can we help these people? Mm-hmm. Because the answer is not that everybody needs to move to the country and have a homestead.
Right.
You need to have a homestead mentality wherever you are, whether that be proper pantry management or raising quail or figuring out how to plant apples in your yard that look ornamental so that you can get some food off of your land, or just learning, a new skill.
Yeah, cooking from scratch. I mean, you can do that from anywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, these are things that people, you know, that no matter where you live, you can do it. And I think it's important, you know, that people take these steps now more than ever. You know, I say that, but I've always felt like it was important. You know, I just think that this is the thing that wakes people up. You know, and it was my excuse too. I remember back in 2012, you know, I talked about homesteading all the time, getting me a piece of land and raise me some animals and grow me a big garden and doing this, doing that. And then it's like, okay, you got stage 3 colon cancer. You can't go get your land now. What are you going to do? You know? And it was like a wake up call for me to say, okay, do it right here. Do it right now, right where you're at. And do as much as you can. And you know what? I was able to do quite a bit. I was pretty amazed at how much I could do.
I mean, one raised bed is easy to manage, and you can get a ton of food off that, just vegetable-wise. Mm-hmm. And or containers. I don't know. I try to talk to people where they are when they start asking questions rather than berate them for not having taken these steps sooner, or tell them they need to, you know, have a 21-acre homestead. I have a 3-acre homestead. I can barely keep up with it. I actually can't keep up with it. So I don't know how these people do their pieces. I guess they have tractors and stuff. But, you know, a city lot, which I had when I lived in Portland, Oregon, a city lot, you can do a lot with that.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's springtime, you know, it's really, it's just now the beginning of planting season, and in a lot of places that hasn't even really started yet. You know, and there's a lot of people that are afraid of the future. I mean, we're hearing meat plants closing down, we're hearing, you know, just all kinds of things happening where it could get, you know, hopefully not, but it could get where it's a little tougher to stock up on food from the store at some point in the future. What advice do you have for people? Just say, okay, no matter where you live, here's some first steps maybe you could take to start right where you're at doing something.
Well, this is going to sound nuts, but the first step I think people should take, and they may have already at this point, is to assess their pantry. What are you storing? What do you have stored? And organize it. And the way I recommend people do this is you have a long-term storage in one place, like your garage, your basement, your laundry room, under your bed. It just depends on what size house you have.
Right.
And then you have short-term storage in your kitchen, and you have your extras in that long-term storage. Every time you take something out of the long-term storage, you reorder. So long-term storage to short-term storage, you reorder. Okay, so once you get that kind of assessed and organized, I think the next thing you need to do is assess what you actually use as a family or as a person if you live alone. And that's the food journal. And, you know, if you take a spaghetti sauce out and have spaghetti, you write down, you know, one package spaghetti noodles, one package spaghetti sauce. If later that week you do it again, you write a tick mark next to it. So you have tick marks. When you've done that for a week or two, you have a pretty good idea how much cheese, milk, butter, bread, lunch meat, like Go-Gurt, whatever it is you eat, that you eat. And once you have that, then you can start the process of stocking up. And the way you stock up is, you know, let's say Go-Gurt is the thing you decide to stock up on. I don't know why it would be that. But Go-Gurt today is the example. If you say, okay, my family goes through 7 of these a week, next time you go to the store, buy 14. So that's called doubling. Until you have enough to have a 2-week supply. And then once you have a 2-week supply and you're eating the oldest and filling in with the newest, And then you go to the spaghetti sauce and you do something and have a 2-week. I think getting a system like that, which I know sounds really type A, and it can sound like challenging to manage, but it's not as challenging as you think. I am a messy, disorganized woman, and I have managed to do this. So if I can do it, you can do it. I think starting there and getting those, you know, toilet paper and paper towels and cleaning supplies and food and all of that into a rotation where you have a 4-week cushion is key, because then when something like this happens and everybody's running to the store, you're like, I had a month. I can order online for delivery. And if it takes 3 weeks to get here, I don't care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
or if I lose
great,
a job,
yeah.
I lost a job. I had a year's worth of toilet paper stored because I'm crazy about, I don't like running out of toilet paper. And I didn't like I had that much. But anyway, I went a whole year without buying toilet paper that first year. And that was a huge thing for my budget because I didn't need to make the money to
right. Yeah, I you know, when this all started and our Walmart was wiped out and everything and everybody was going to the grocery store and spending $400 and $500 on groceries, my wife and I, we spent nothing. We didn't even, I think we went to the grocery store and picked up like 5 or 6 things that week. We were like, we just don't need anything. We got a couple of gallons of milk and like, I mean, we just didn't need a lot. And we didn't sweat it. We were like, well, if this thing goes like a couple months, we might, you know, be in a little bit of, you know, food trouble, but we had no worries for a couple months at least, you know, and on a lot of things, it was a lot longer than that. Just, you know, on a few things, it was maybe a couple months. We just didn't sweat it. There was no buying toilet paper. There was no buying, you know, paper towels or any stuff. I wouldn't say we're like hoarders and we got like tons of that stuff. But we have a fair amount of it, you know. We stock up enough to get us by for a couple months at all times, you know. And we just didn't have that worry, so it wasn't, you know, a big deal. And I remember when this kind of all went down, I seen on the news a couple times, or even on social media, people were going crazy about all the preppers who were cleaning off the shelves. And I was like,
those aren't preppers.
Yeah, those aren't the preppers cleaning off the shelves. They already have their stuff. Those are the people
They're
who weren't
there.
Preppers. Yeah, I agree. It's just like, yeah, people who are prepared don't run to the store and clean the shelves off. They don't need to. But I think that's great advice. You know what you need, know what you have, know what you're using before you move on to the next step. I mean, because you can say, I want to start growing food, but if you don't know what food you're eating regularly, don't know what you need. I mean, you're right. I think that's a great first step. And it is something I probably would have overlooked. I mean, I usually go straight for the garden. Let's get some stuff growing, you know, but like you said.
Yeah, I think that's step two, though. Step two is learn to grow stuff, because a lot of plans in a scarcity situation is, I'm going to grow my food. I've bought this random can of weird seeds of stuff I've never grown, and then they don't grow anything. And so the first time you're learning how to grow a plant is really needed.
Yeah.
Right?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And that's not a good way to do that. Growing plants takes time and learning. If you're motivated to become more independent and grow plants this year, learn how to plant stuff that's easy to grow, like zucchini in Oregon, right? Zucchini in Tennessee is not easy to grow, by the way. But zucchini in Oregon is easy to grow. Okra and sweet potatoes in Tennessee. Like, go out and talk to a couple people. Find out what grows well. Grow a couple of hard things, but start growing stuff. Don't be upset when something fails, because something always, I mean, you know this. Have you ever had a year when there was no failures at all?
No.
No. But something always fails. If you plant diversity, something doesn't fail. Yeah. And I think learning that, building it into your lifestyle, is just like, you know, grocery shopping is built into your lifestyle. That sets you up for success. It'll help you this year, but it will help you for the rest of your life. You'll soon discover you never want another store tomato again.
Right.
Because you'll be growing yours, and they'll taste so much better.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, I think that's great. Now, but there's some people who are living in places where they really can't have a big garden. They can't grow a lot. I mean, they can grow some little things. I mean, you can grow some lettuce here. You can grow a couple things in a pot, and almost everybody can do that. I can't think of too many situations where somebody couldn't do that. But, you know, I mean, what would you say to the person who can't grow anything? I mean, are they just out of luck, or is there anything they can do?
It's very rare I've met somebody who really can't grow something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
So, like, my uncle and his girlfriend live in New York City, and living quarters are tight. She always has herbs growing somewhere, right? And right, and like right now, they have a balcony, which is like awesome. Or last time I was there, they do. I don't know if they've moved since then. So she had herbs and a pot garden, like little things in a pot. Well, okay, if you don't have a balcony, you can't do that. But you can grow herbs inside.
Yeah.
You can grow this inside in 2 square feet. So if you can find 2 square feet and some grow lights, you can grow something.
And yeah, I've grown lettuce in the house in the middle of winter with no problem whatsoever.
Yeah, but if you can't do that, like if really you have a bedroom and there's not 2 square feet, or you're living on a couch in a living room, I don't know, then it's time to look at your local ecosystem of jobs and side hustles and start figuring out ways to do the one thing you need to do, which is build up cash.
Yeah.
And, you know, that could be, like, literally that's Shipt right now, or Grubhub, or, like, any of these shopping apps. Those things are instant money. Or look for ways to build value, or find somebody that has a backyard that lets grow there, if that's the thing you want to do. I think you kind of have to listen to your heart.
Yeah.
And build that. But it's, you know, you might be thinking, I mean, if you're in that situation where you really can't, you might be looking at, how do I get a more secure living situation where I can? And then what do I need to do to get there?
Yeah, and I'm even thinking of the person who maybe they're financially okay. They're just living in a place where it's hard to grow things. Maybe most of their windows are on the north side of the house. They don't get a lot of direct sunlight. And they could grow some little things, but it isn't really enough to add up to a lot of actual food in the pantry. You know, and then you can go into a farmer's market and stock up on things and learn to preserve that food and, you know, put up some good healthy food still and still do it that way. I mean, you know, that's an option for some people who are just limited even on how much they could grow.
But despite the fact I grow a lot of my own food, I go to the farmer's market every week and spend some money. And I get to know the farmers, and when they're in that situation where they have too much of whatever that week, I know that they can sell me high volumes of tomatoes or whatever, and I will can it. Or they can trade me, one of them trades me cabbage for half the sauerkraut, and I make sauerkraut.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and by being involved in those communities, I do think you can really do a lot. And you can preserve your own food. I actually spend less money on food because I do the canning than most people do every year.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we
and
like
it's because I get everything all at once.
Right,
so I have
yeah.
these crazy weekends, but yeah.
Well, you know, like I'm on a pretty small lot. I mean, we're in a, you know, a quarter acre total here since I got two lots now. And, I still don't grow corn because corn takes up a lot of space for what you get.
No
so
way.
I grow a lot of other stuff, and I leave the corn. And you know what? We can buy sweet corn here so cheap at farmers markets and at farm stands and things like that. They just sell it by the, you know, they got these brown paper bags just loaded with it. And we just go and we'll buy a bunch of that and freeze it, store it, you know, can it, whatever. And we'll have corn all year, and we don't grow a single ear. And that's okay. You know, we don't mind doing that because it's a trade off, you know, with something we don't want to grow because of how much room it takes. And we're able to have plenty, and we can support another person that's selling it, you know.
Yeah, and I think you need to think about your role in your food system, like you have, and realize corn's not my thing. Mm-hmm. I want corn. This is how I'm getting corn. That's exactly how you make that decision. We don't grow corn here either because it's hard to grow here. I get enormous pest pressure.
Yeah.
It
grows like a weed in Indiana. It really does, but you know,
yeah,
it's just,
sure.
But it takes up a lot of space, so we just don't mess with it. But I mean, it's probably our number one favorite thing to eat. You know, as a side dish, you know, we eat a lot of corn. You know, we eat a lot of corn on the cob, we eat a lot of canned corn. It's just something we eat a lot. We, you know, several meals a week, we have corn with it, but we just don't grow it. You know, it's just one of the things. You know, but it sounds crazy not to grow something you're eating that much of, but not when it's so readily available at a cheap price.
Oh no,
you know,
it's not crazy. So there is some specialization, and the people you're buying corn from have like acres and acres of it.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. And then, like I said, they sell it dirt cheap, and it's like, yeah, we're just going to go that route. But I enjoy growing a lot of the other stuff that, you know, we can grow plenty of tomatoes for a whole year. When we grow enough, I don't have to ever buy a tomato. We can mm-hmm. grow plenty here on our little piece of property. We grow enough beans because, I mean, I've got trellises everywhere, and about everywhere there's a trellis, it's got beans growing up it, you know, so we get a lot of beans and cucumbers, you know, I can a lot of cucumbers. We don't, and pickles and things, and we don't need to buy anything like that. So, I mean, there's things you can grow even on a small lot that, you know, you can say, these few things, I'm going to put enough away for the whole year, but there's going to be a few mm-hmm. things I can't, you know, so I'm going to try, you know, get those from other people and try to source enough to put that away as well. And like you said, you know, you keep track of what you're using, you know, keep an inventory on that and know what it is your family eats and how much you go through and, you know, and just kind of set the numbers and figure out what it's going to take for you to go several months and, you know, have several months of food in your house. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. I can tell you on 4 square feet, inside my house on shelves, I grow, and this is going to make organic people really upset, but I grow lettuce hydroponically right now
mm-hmm. yeah,
with lights and trays and no pump, and that has been enough to feed 3 people through this whole thing, a salad every day.
Really? Wow.
And, you know, people have been on me about it not being all organic, which most of my growing practices are, and mm-hmm. I've just been learning about hydroponics this year. I do aquaponics usually. Mm-hmm. I just don't want fish in the house. And I have to say that this tastes better. I'm convinced it's nutritionally superior to what I can get in the store grown organically and shipped from California. And I had it the whole time.
Yeah.
So I've been pretty happy with that system. I am going to tweak it and figure out if I can use worm castings instead of the nutrients I buy. But from a, you know, limiting my impact on the world around me and increasing my ability to grow lettuce, like 4 square feet has fed 3 people for, you know, 7 weeks now. All the lettuce we can eat, pretty much.
I wonder if you could take a system like that and actually take water from your aquaponics tank outside and just have it sit still in that system in the house. I wonder if that would work.
I don't know. I'm afraid the algae would get up, because part of why my aquaponics system outside doesn't get super algae'd out is the fish are in there eating it, but also the water is moving, and so there's oxygen in there.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't know if you had a closed system where the light wasn't getting to the water or not. I didn't know if that was the...
Well, I do keep the light from the water, but I'm using the Kratky method, so it's like mm-hmm. there's a plant, there's an air gap, and then there's water.
Yeah.
And I don't have any pumps or oxygenators in there. Because I was just using what I had, and it worked. And now we're actually putting a whole system in front of my house that's separate from the aquaponics system, because we get late blight here on our tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be a closed system this year, because my fish have passed on the blight, which we think comes from the soil. I think it's because I have wicking beds as part of the system. Yeah. So what I've now been reading about is a guy who makes compost tea out of worm castings and uses mm-hmm. that in a closed system like my tomatoes are in, and doesn't have to add nutrients, and he doesn't know why it's working. So we'll be experimenting with that later this year.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
That'll take time. You got to get the worm bin, you got to get the worm castings, you got to make your tea, and then, you know.
The only way I've been able to beat the blight is just, you know, I always have a lot of tomatoes outside, and you're right, they always get, I mean, just about every year, at some point in the year, they're going to get some blight, you know, and I just try to get what I can off of them while I can get it. But I've actually had really good luck with the tomatoes in the greenhouse. I actually grow some in the ground inside my little greenhouse. After I get all my seed starting done in the year, I got these removable shelves come out of I have like the stands in there for the shelves, and I remove the shelves and I grow the tomatoes up through the shelves almost like a tomato cage, and I don't have any trouble with the blight in there. It's like the wind carries it or something, I don't know, but it just keeps them away from that. And now I've not tried growing tomatoes in my aquaponics system, because to be honest, mint has pretty much taken over my aquaponics system. It's a mint bed, that's all that is.
Well, you know, at least you have lots of peppermint tea for the winter.
Yeah, I have all the mint for tea or any other purpose I could possibly want. I got plenty of mint. Let me tell you, if I could figure out a way to sell that to the neighbors, I'd have it made.
Yeah. We see ours grows in the creek. We call it creek mint. That's how I get my mint every year.
Mm-hmm.
But my neighbor has been gorilla planting mint all over the holler in the last 3 weeks. So we'll see what happens.
So you're doing a lot down there. I mean, you've got aquaponics, obviously. So you got some things going on there. You're doing some cracky hydroponics in the house.
Hydroponics.
Mm-hmm. And you're doing. You have chickens, right?
I have ducks. I have three chickens right now that are free range and eating bugs. But I have transitioned from chickens to ducks because I like their eggs better.
You like that? You like raising them better? I mean, you find them an easier bird to raise.
Yeah, they don't scratch up my garden as much when I make the mistake of leaving the gate open. So they're less destructive, although they make terrible mud puddles. So
I got a friend who just got some ducks, and every day I hear from him is, man, these are some messy creatures.
They are messy creatures. You want to have room for ducks. And I have a pond on property, which they found, so they're pretty happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you have a pretty large garden. You have an in-ground garden, too, right? I mean, you're not doing everything with aquaponics, right?
Right. So I have a hydroponic system with a pump that's just being turned on as we have this call. Like, it's been cracky style because the pump wasn't working. Well, now it's going to work. And that's in front of the house, which is south facing. So I'm trying to make the whole front of the house this oasis of edible plant shade area where I can have a cocktail at night and enjoy myself. And then above the house, I have another garden plot that's pretty big, and I have a hillside that I like to grow squash and sweet potatoes on because it keeps the weeds down.
Yeah. You still have
pigs. Did you hear about the pig?
No, you used to have goats, but you have goats anymore?
I have a goat. One goat died. I'm getting a replacement goat. We are finishing some fencing things before we do that. But yeah, the goat is really just weed control. I don't milk her or anything, and she just weeds are insane here. So
I didn't know if it ate
around
any
the yard.
I wasn't sure if it ate any weeds or not, because every time I seen a picture of it, it was on top of your house.
Yeah, I know. I mean, there must be weeds up there. She really likes my roof.
So you got into pigs too, huh?
So I came out one day to feed the chicken ducks because they all hang out together. Mm-hmm. And there was a pig in the yard, and it was pot-bellied pig, and we tried to find the owner, never did. Eventually, Marty became aggressive and became freezer food. And then somebody had free AGH, American Guinea Hog, and we adopted those, and they were more pot-bellied pig than guinea hogs, so eventually they became freezer food. This year, as this whole shutdown happened, part of the family meeting was how do we get the three of us work together to raise more food. So one of the neighbors is doing rabbits. We're going to run some meat chickens soon, and we like pork, so I put out on my podcast, I think I want to add a pig again this year. And one of my listeners said, I have a red wattle female. If you want to buy her and drop her off, and she's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, is she friendly? And he said, yes. I've been working on developing a relationship with her because I don't want to send her to freezer camp. I would like to breed her and then have an ongoing pig process here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
that's good. That's
we have
good
pigs
plan.
Again in the pig pasture.
how much property are you on?
I'm on 3.2 acres, so it's not huge. Yeah, but
you have plenty of room for that. Yeah, plenty of room for what you're doing. Yeah. I mean, you ain't going to run a cattle farm on it, but plenty of room for a nice little homestead for sure, and plenty of animals.
Horses or cows here, because it'll end up a mud pit if I do that.
Well, yeah, you're fine then. Now, you got some woods around you, obviously. You do a lot of foraging, right?
Yeah, so I am surrounded by hunters who own 80 to 180 acres, and they leave it wilderness. And they've given me permission to hike on their land as long as I don't hunt, which is fine because I can hunt on my land.
Yeah.
And so I go walk just about every day and look for wild edibles. And so it's been a 14-year learning process here as I just, I plant and then I have to figure out what it is. And then I have to figure out if it's medicinal or edible. And foraging in the woods really has added a lot to the food security here during this time too, because in spring, all the spring greens are coming out and the mushrooms and, all of that stuff. So look, the fact that I had that knowledge going into this, cause we didn't go to the store for 6 weeks. It was really helpful from a variety standpoint, just adding variety to the diet.
Yeah, I think that's great. It's more further proof that you don't have to have necessarily a lot of land, because there's other options where you can get out and mm-hmm. and forage and things on other land. Like where I live, I don't have a lot of land, but we do a lot of foraging and hunting and things like that, because I live like 5 miles away from a wilderness preserve, and they open, it's got all the hunting seasons, and we're allowed to forage there, and it's hundreds of acres, and I love that. I can go there anytime I want, and nobody forages there. People hunt there, but nobody forages there.
I think people are just so afraid of getting poisonous plants that they don't start.
I can walk in there and fill garbage bags full of raspberries and blackberries and things like that. And, I mean, there's just so many in there, and nobody picks those things. And, I mean, it just blows my mind,
Yeah, that's something people don't realize. I do think if food were to get scarce, you would see the foraging increase.
Yeah,
because as people become more motivated by hunger, they start learning things quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think the reason we have hunting seasons and regulations is because of the depression, because people were just cleaning out every animal and everything.
Well, I was thinking about turkeys and how they almost went extinct, the wild turkey.
Mm-hmm.
And it was specific to Tennessee, but I'm sure this is true other places. During the Civil War, everything got over hunted because people were starving, and you don't give a fig about hunting regulations when you're starving. Not that they had them then, but tomorrow, if everybody's hungry, they don't care if it's deer season or not, if they see a deer. Mm-hmm. And so they got over hunted, and then some of their habitat was destroyed by war, and then they weren't coming back. And so they started developing a hunting culture for turkey here, which, set limits, but it also made it a desirable thing to cultivate.
Yeah.
And as part of that process, we have wild turkey again everywhere. And that's a story that has happened with multiple animals, where once you turn it into a recreation, it becomes something that comes back. Or once you turn it into something like buffalo that you can eat at a restaurant again, suddenly people are raising buffalo.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's interesting how you could overhunting. I look at the number of deer around where I live, and it's just amazing. We have so many deer around here, and I can't even imagine that you could. I mean, just hard to believe you could overhunt them. There were just so many. I mean, you just see them by the hundreds sometimes, in the fields and stuff, and it just blows my mind to think that you could overhunt them. I mean, it's pretty heavy pressure at one time in history to wipe out the game.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you can overhunt anything, really.
Oh yeah. Even mushrooms, because I haven't been finding any of those this year.
Oh no. Yeah, for me, the oyster mushroom season was not very good this year. I find many pounds of oyster mushrooms. I found like two cycles of them.
I have a couple of friends that found a lot of morels up here, but I haven't been out a whole lot. I only went out a couple times, but I didn't find any, and I was like, okay, now I'm just getting upset now. Everybody's finding them amazing. I love them.
I found
they're
my
really
first
good.
Morels ever this year. I was so happy.
Oh, really? Yeah, they're not quite as big down that area as they are up here. Yeah. They seem like a little more plentiful up here. But I remember when I lived down there, it didn't seem like that was something. Ginseng was the thing everybody hunted down there. It's like they had ginseng season, man. Everybody tore that up.
Yeah, I haven't actually gone looking for ginseng yet, so I have no idea what it looks like. That's their first one. I don't know what it looks like. I mean, I know what pictures on the internet look like, but until you see the plant, you don't really know what it looks like.
Right, yeah. I used to get invited out to go on ginseng hunts with people down there and stuff, and I was from Indiana because we moved down there when I was a teenager, and I didn't have a clue what they were even talking about. But everybody was hunting it just to sell it and make money, I guess, but...
See, what I need to do is plant some, and then it'll grow, and then I'll know what it looks like, and then I'll look around, and it'll be all over the hills around.
Probably, yeah. You'll wish you'd...
That's what happened with Jerusalem artichokes. I was like, oh, they grow here wild. Got it. Now they're all over my garden.
You sure? It's a beautiful area down there. And I tell you what, if you're going to live free somewhere, Tennessee, in that area is one of the best places you could do it. I know that's just a great area, and I always just was amazed at the beauty around there and the abundance and just everything that was happening down there. It seemed like it's just a really I call it the hub of the Cumberland down there. It's just a beautiful area. I just always loved it.
Yeah, I always say if I'm going to get stuck somewhere where I have to survive in the woods, this is where I want to be.
Yeah, it's nice.
Because it's also got a very wide variety of edible things you can find compared to, like Alaska.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And the climate's relatively mild. I mean, we get cold winters, but not always and not very long.
Right.
So I do like this area from a living free standpoint.
Yeah. And the weather even though you have a winter and it's cold, it's nothing like Indiana. I can
nope.
Verify that.
Yep. Yeah. We get some cold days here. We don't get cold months.
I mean, how long have you already put your garden out? I mean, is everything out already?
Everything should be out. Everything is not out, but I'm putting sweet potato slips out today or tomorrow, and yeah. Pretty much everything can be planted now. It's a little on the early side for something like okra,
mm-hmm.
but even that, if I put it out now, it'll be fine.
Yeah, I took the plunge.
Tomatoes are 3 feet tall outside.
I think our average last frost date here is like May 10th, and I took the plunge a few days ago and just planted everything. I looked mm-hmm. at the 15-day forecast. It looked pretty good. I was like, I'm going for it. I'm just gonna go for it and see what happens.
Yeah, that's like plant roulette.
Yeah, it is.
You have more in background so that if they die, you can put more out.
I have a few things. I did put all my peppers out, which is risky.
Yeah, it is. Well, I'm making cover. Peppers actually will handle some of these.
I have some row cover and stuff to throw over if we get a frost or something. And just, as long as they don't hang out cold too long, I guess I'd be all right. But I did take a little bit of a chance. I'm gonna give it a go. We're going to see what happens. But sounds like things are, where you're at and the things you're practicing are paying off for you. I mean, it sounds like you have built in a lot of freedom in your life and you're doing a few jobs. I mean, you've got a few things going on, but it sounds like you've worked them together where they all kind of intertwine. They all kind of work together to where they don't overwhelm you and you're not doing anything, halfway. It's kind of, you're able to pour yourself into the things you're doing to an extent to make some beneficial and make a profit on them. And it sounds like I said, it's really worked out for you as far as just putting some freedom into your life. And I think a lot of people look at that and they admire it and they wish they had it. And I think that, listening to your podcast, listening to you being part of your Facebook group, which is called the Coffee, what's it called?
Living in Tennessee Coffee Break Group.
Coffee Break Group, yeah, that's what I was thinking it was. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of good conversation going on in there. And, I think people can just, follow you there and they can get, a lot of tips and a lot of education on living a lifestyle that does build freedom into their lives. So I appreciate everything you're doing, Nicole, and I think you're doing a great job.
Well, I really try to share my failures and mistakes very transparently. Somebody asked me today if the coffee business was up since the shut-in. And I said about 20%, but it should be up 40% based on what I was planning this year. So I don't know if it's, technically, yes, it's up.
Yeah.
But people are worried about money. So, premium coffee may not be the first thing they buy.
Yep.
But, 20% up right now is not so bad. However, he said, well, I'll keep it. It was for an article. He said, I'll keep it off the record. I said, actually, I don't care. I talk about my numbers on my podcast. I'm not shy about it. People need to know I'm putting this much effort in, and this is how much money I'm actually getting out of it. That's how they can start planning their own thing. So we try to be as transparent as possible and not shy away from the things that didn't work. Like if my tomato growing this year is an abysmal mistake, everybody will know how much I put into it and how much I lost my budget.
Well, I love that about your podcast and your group and stuff, how transparent you are and just sharing the failures too, because it's the reality of the lifestyle. I'm not as free in my lifestyle as you are. I've got a full-time, more than full-time job, and I'm doing this stuff kind of on the side, and I'll tell you what, I have plenty of failures. I mean, three years ago we just were devastated by insects. I got the worst. Two years ago and we had the worst crop ever. And even last year was not great. I got better, but the weather sometimes doesn't cooperate. Sometimes you just get attacked by insects and you have to figure out some organic methods to try to combat that, and it's not easy. And sometimes it wears on you and you get frustrated and you're like, why am I doing this again? And you have to remind yourself.
Why did I just lose all my ducks to a predator?
That's right. Yeah. it's the reality of it. And there is frustrations and people need to see that. We don't need to paint a picture for them that's just completely rosy. But at the same time, I feel like it's a life worth living. And I think you do too.
Yeah. No, I love this lifestyle. And more people who want to come this way, I'm always happy to help them get started.
I think you've played part in convincing a few people to come down in that area too, in the Tennessee area.
We're getting another one in a month.
Yeah, I kind of seen that on your group the other day. I was like, oh, another one moving down there. She talked another one into it.
Matthew, welcome to Tennessee.
Well, like I said, it's a great area, and if it wasn't for family commitments and things up here, I would think that'd probably be the place I'd be living too, because I really liked it down there. You know, it's a nice area. So, well, you keep up the great work, Nicole, and I appreciate again everything you're doing, and thanks for coming on the podcast today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, great interview, Nicole. Thanks for being on the podcast, and you just had some great advice for folks that are looking to build self-reliance and freedom into their lives. And I know folks that are heading down that path will really appreciate those tips and the interview. So thanks again for coming on. I will definitely put links to your podcast, Living Free in Tennessee, and your website and the Facebook group, the Coffee Break Facebook group. And I really encourage everyone to go over and check out everything that Nicole's doing. She's doing some just great stuff over there. And I know you'll enjoy everything that she's got going on. So check it out and give her podcast a listen. Also wanted to let the Patreon members know that I had a podcast. I loaded a podcast up a couple days ago. It was actually a couple days before we got that big frost. And I actually did a podcast on late freeze and frost protection for your garden. So I folks that are still in that situation, I mean, especially up north of me, they'll definitely still get the benefit from that podcast and just tips and clues on how to keep your garden alive when the temps drop low. So it helped me out. Everything that I talk about in there, a lot of that stuff I did on my own garden, and it worked out, and I saved my garden. So just I think some great tips in there if you're finding yourself in that situation. So Patreon members, go check that out. Anybody else that's interested in being a Patreon member, we really appreciate the support, and you can find a link to that in the show notes of today's podcast. So thanks again for supporting us. And to everyone else, I hope that you got through the cold snap just fine. I hope your garden survived, and I hope you have another great week of gardening and homesteading. And until next week, happy homesteading, and God bless. I hope you enjoyed this episode. To learn more or find more episodes, just head on over to haroldthornbro.com. Thanks for listening.